Welcome to the Intentional Parents Podcast. Intentional exists to help parents in their God-given task to raise passionate Jesus followers. We exist to bring hope, help, and healing to families. Each week, we will talk about anything from parenting, marriage, lifestyle, and what it looks like to follow Jesus in our time. Intentional is made up of Phil and Diane Comer and Brooke and Elizabeth Moser. I am Brooke, and the funny thing is, we are all family. Elizabeth is Phil and Diane's daughter, so we're a family figuring this thing out together. We hope this podcast feels like you're sitting with us in our home talking about how to do this thing called life together. Elizabeth and I are your hosts. Let's get into this week's podcast.
Welcome back to the Intentional Parents Podcast. Thank you so much for just faithfully listening and engaging with our content. We're so grateful for all of you. Today, it's just Mom and I again, kind of a follow-up episode to the last one. Last episode, we talked about this ever-present feeling as moms of feeling just overwhelmed by the task of motherhood and life. And, you know, as we were talking about that and preparing for that, I just couldn't help but have in my just mind's view all the moms who their life literally is too much for one person to handle, that what is happening in their life currently or has been happening for a long time, and not just the moms, the dads too, is a situation they never saw coming, whether it's a special needs child, a chronic illness that they never saw as a part of their life plan, because none of us do, a really broken marriage, you're a single parent, or you feel like you're a single parent within your own marriage, whatever it may be, something that was not a part of your life plan, which I think all of us can relate to, but something that affects you every day. And I just couldn't help but just be burdened for that parent who's going to listen to something about being overwhelmed and practical things and feel like, gosh, that feels like a privilege. Like, I wish I could change a few things and feel less overwhelmed, but that's not my life. And we know that there are a lot of you out there, and you're not alone. That's a season I find myself in. And so I think I feel drawn to you more than ever. When the old ways don't work the same as they used to.
And when you live in a constant state of tension, thinking, okay, when is the next shoe going to drop? Because you're absolutely sure and probably right that another shoe is going to drop. And you're living in that kind of traumatized, no end in sight story. So Elizabeth and I wanted to talk about this because we think that now more than ever, there are men and women that we know, friends of ours, who are living that way right now. It's like saying right now, it's just too much. Too many things came at us all at the same time. We already had things we were dealing with. And now the systems that we use, good systems, don't work. Time in the Word in the morning isn't possible or doesn't work, or we hear silence because our grief is so great. Things just can't come together if I would just take the time to get all organized and adjust my priorities. Because sometimes, in all honesty, life is too much. And I'm mostly interviewing Elizabeth today because she's right there right now and has been for a long time, which has drawn me into it as well. There have been moments of my own collapse this year as I bear the burden of my daughter, who I love, and I can't fix everything. And that even sometimes in my hoping, it becomes too much. And I walk, I leave and drive away from Elizabeth's house after a week of being there to help her. And I'm crying on my way home because I'm leaving her in the same place. Maybe I did a little laundry and gave her a little break, but I didn't actually affect her real life. And so if this is you, or if this is somebody that you know, we're letting you listen into really is a mother-daughter conversation that doesn't have a bunch of answers, but there are some real wise things that Elizabeth is learning along the way, some of which I have learned in the past. And let me just tell you, as an older woman now, I am 62 years old, And I've lived a long life now. You know, mm-hmm. I'm old. My face is wrinkled, and I look back now, and there have been seasons for me in my life where I just thought this is impossible. I just can't do it. I remember when Matthew at 8 years old came down with type 1 diabetes. It was impossible to control at first. And I was terrified. I don't feel like I slept for the first 4 months because I was sure he was going to die. And feeling the total overwhelm of that. And yet my greatest story of the presence of Jesus and the prophetic words of believers into my life came out of that time.
Yeah.
I'll share another time. I've been there, but Elizabeth has been there for quite some time, and there is no end in sight. So first of all, Elizabeth, would you, in the kindest of terms that you can, what could you share with us what you can share?
Yeah. Yeah, and you guys all know at this point we're pretty like open books. We just haven't shared the full story of what's been happening with our son this year, and we totally plan to at some point. But, you know, a lot of you know we've shared our third daughter, Birdie. We shared her story on the podcast before. We'll link that. So I won't go into full detail, but she is 5 and a half now. But 5 years ago, when she was about 6 months old, she was rushed to the emergency room and diagnosed with a devastating form of epilepsy called infantile spasms. And it's pretty much the only form of epilepsy that causes like horrific brain damage and is incredibly difficult to treat. And, you know, we were left with this diagnosis and a couple of treatment options, but with all of the doctors saying, we don't know if the treatments will work. We don't know if she will survive them, if they do, because mm-hmm. they're so hard on her body. And if she makes it through the treatment and we can stop the seizures, we don't know what her outcome will be. She will mm-hmm. be anywhere from severely disabled, never talk to you, feeding mm-hmm. tube her whole life, to best case scenario, she will have learning disabilities. She will struggle a lot, but if you can get her all the right interventions, she might be able to live a somewhat normal life. Mm-hmm. But we really won't know for the next at least 5 years. Mm-hmm. But just be prepared to be in every form of therapy yeah. you could imagine. And like, it's a long road ahead. So that was obviously, there's so much there that yeah. we've been learning over the last 5 years. And we shared a lot of that on that episode. So I won't go into all of it, but we were just catapulted into just our life turned upside down. You hear yeah. that people say yeah. that all the time, but mm-hmm. we had what we thought were healthy children. Everything was going according to the rough plan that we'd had. We hadn't ever really hit anything super hard. We'd had mm-hmm. just kind of like the normal heart of mm-hmm. life. And that just gutted us mm-hmm. in all honesty. Mm-hmm. And sitting in the unknowns of that and learning to grieve and learning to live in a constant state of grief mm-hmm. was just so new for me mm-hmm. and overwhelming. And to like let myself feel all the depth of my emotions mm-hmm. and not just try to do stuff and mm-hmm. organize things and make it mm-hmm. better. So we had already been in that for 5 years. And Birdie is a complete miracle. Mm-hmm. And she made it through the treatment. And she is definitely on the best case scenario mm-hmm. end mm-hmm. of things. Like so many prayers answered. But it's been a long 5 years.
And it's still, okay, so you say
yeah,
that.
Still very
but
present.
I do remember way back when we didn't know she was going to survive, you saying mm-hmm. almost your greatest fear was, and honestly, it's what you're living now, that she would look normal.
Yeah.
But she would, and be aware enough of people around her to know that she was not normal. And yeah. in all honesty, that's Birdie right now.
Yeah.
You know, behind the brain damage is a very intelligent girl who can't get past some of the hindrances that were caused during that few months when her brain was on chaotic brainwaves. Yeah. And so she has a really hard time handling sensory stimulation and just yeah. out of nowhere will just start to, well, it seems like to me, although I'm beginning to see the clues a little bit,
yeah,
just meltdown. A five-year-old yeah. at, you know, top of her lungs meltdown. She doesn't withdraw into a corner as some children will do. She lets the entire world know that she's overwhelmed and her brain's just going crazy.
Yeah.
And so you never know where you're going to be when that happens.
No.
And you don't know who's going to be there. And it's embarrassing. And it doesn't make sense to outsiders to look at it. It looks like she's just
Looks like I'm not a very good
parent.
You don't
know how to raise your kids.
Yeah.
You know? And so, but the reality is she can talk. She can laugh. She's potty trained. She's learning to read.
Yeah.
I mean, we never thought the diagnosis did not give you a lot of hope that that would be. But she's also hard,
but
a
her
hard
life
child
is hard.
To raise.
Yeah, yeah, her life is really hard. And oftentimes our home is hard because of that. There's a lot of screaming, a lot of time to help her and help just help her move through a normal day.
To help kind of talk her down off the cliff sort of thing too.
Yeah. And lots of, thankfully, we've had some incredible occupational therapists and just helping us understand what is happening to her brain, what's happening to her body, so that we can parent her through a lens of empathy rather than stress or frustration. And all gets mixed in at times. Mm-hmm. But so, yeah, that already felt like too much.
Yeah.
And we chose to have a fourth kid on top of that, which as soon as I got pregnant, I was like, what were we thinking? But has been the biggest gift to Birdie to have a little buddy who they're 2 years apart, but developmentally they're very close.
Yeah.
And for her to have somebody who's just, they do everything together and they just get each other.
Mm-hmm. And they fight all day long.
They fight all day long.
Top of their lungs.
Oh my gosh. Yes. Yeah. When you have one kind of emotionally volatile child and then you have one who's just 2 years younger who thinks that that's how we,
normal,
how we act. Yeah. It's a little crazy in my house right now. So we already, that alone felt like, wow, this is like, my life is forever changed. This is what I do. Mm-hmm. Like I helping Birdie be successful in the world while also parenting my other kids. Like it was all consuming.
Yep.
And I tried all the things, systemizing things, ordering, like creating order, planning things. And I just still felt overwhelmed. And then on top of it, I felt this like guilt that I must be doing something wrong. Mm-hmm. Like I must be not taking enough things off my plate. I must be... Just, I've got to figure this out. Mm-hmm. And I think I was slowly getting to a place of acceptance, really, of accepting what Birdie's limitations are currently. We don't know fully what they're going to be as she gets older. And she continues to defy all odds, but it's not without, it's a battle. Mm-hmm. Her life is a battle. And so I was getting to a place of feeling like, okay, like, we're a long ways into this. This feels a little more like normal for us. I was slowly figuring out how to bring other people into it so it didn't feel so lonely. And just felt like I was like almost at this, okay, we're getting to a more sustainable place. And then a year ago in December, our son suddenly became severely ill. And again, we'll share his whole story at some point. I feel like I cry even just mentioning it. But it was, it again, even more so than Birdie, just turned our whole family upside down.
Yeah.
And honestly, traumatic is really, I feel like, the appropriate word. Mm-hmm. And of course, it was right in the middle of the like height of the pandemic. And we couldn't get into the right doctors. We couldn't figure, it took us months to figure out what was actually wrong, what was actually going on. And we finally got into a great doctor and started treatments last July, but he's still very far from better. And it's going to be a very long road. And I thought I understood what being overwhelmed or feeling like was too much. I thought I knew what that was. And then this was like this whole other level that I had no space for. In my mind. And I genuinely, I had to wrestle with God in the beginning. I felt like when Birdie first got sick, I didn't struggle with anger at God about encountering suffering. I think because Mom, you had suffered and Matthew had suffered, like that didn't surprise me. What surprised me more was the long-term grief of it.
Yeah.
But I never had to wrestle with feelings of being angry at God. And then when Duke got sick, I was so shocked. I genuinely had felt like, well, nothing can get worse.
Right.
Like we already went through the worst of the worst.
You swallowed the pill.
Yeah. The rarest of things that nobody's ever heard of, you know? And I thought, well, nothing can be worse than that. Like we've gone through the worst thing. We're going to go through other hard things, but like nothing can top that.
Yeah.
And this just like surpassed it in an instant. And I had to wrestle with that. Like, God, this is so unfair. Like, why us? Like all those questions that I think I just didn't have to wrestle through for whatever reason before, but are normal questions. Mm-hmm. And I would say in some ways, even healthy questions. You read the book of Psalms.
Yeah.
Those are the questions David is asking. Yeah. And as long as you're asking them with God and you're not just like staying angry and refusing to work through it, but you're being honest with God. Mm-hmm. God, this does not seem fair. Like why?
Yeah.
Why this much?
Yeah. Where are you?
Yeah. Okay. And God was so present in those times, but I had to wrestle that. Like I had to honestly face that because I knew I couldn't accept anything if I was still trying to understand like what in the world is happening. And I still can't say that I fully understand, but I think, just that feeling of like, this is, we are going to be crushed under this. Like we cannot... Mm-hmm. Yeah. Perseverance is not going to be built through this is what it felt like. Mm-hmm. And I remember I have the privilege of being able to see a great counselor through all of this. And she said to me just something so simple when I was telling her, I feel like she was encouraging me to like take anything off my plate that I possibly can say no to anything you can right now. She's been doing triaging our family, really helping a bunch of lots of us and our kids through all of this. And she was just asking like lots of questions about what can I say no to right now? Mm-hmm. And I was sharing with her, I feel like I'm said no to everything. Like there's nothing else I can take off my plate. And I still feel like I must be doing it wrong. Like it's still way too much.
Yeah.
And she just very like softly and gently said, well, that's because you can't take Birdie off your plate and you can't take Duke off your plate. Uh-huh. And of course it's too much. It is too much. Uh-huh. And to me that, I feel like I just exhaled when she said that because it flipped everything for me of rather than trying to be big enough to shoulder the load, it caused me to realize I am not even close to large enough to shoulder this. Brooke and I cannot shoulder this. But yet God is so much bigger. It says in the book of Psalms that he removes our shoulder from the load. And I just feel like I get this picture of like we're being just crushed by this heavy load and he just kind of swoops in and just moves us out of the way and lets the weight fall on him. The weight's not gone. The load is not gone. But he's shouldering it because we can't. Like we, in our own human strength, we absolutely cannot. Yeah. We will be crushed. And I feel like that was the beginning for me of learning all of these things that have not been, I don't want anybody to hear this and think, oh, Brooke and Elizabeth just are going through all of this just great. And they're just letting God do all these things. Mm-hmm. It has been the most hellish year I have ever experienced. And maybe it will be the worst ever, or maybe there'll be other years that are harder, but we have barely made it through this year. But yet in that, like, I just feel like we've crawled and clawed our way through this year and we're still very much in it. We are not to the other side of this, but I think it's taught us such a dependence on God. Me specifically, I think Brooke was there in a lot of ways, but I think because I can usually find a system or an order. I can work harder. I will like work until the stuff is done.
I will
rise. Yeah. I'll rise to the challenge. I will figure out what treatments need to be done. I'm willing to do all of it. I can without just totally subconscious, but I can rely on my own strength all the time and not even realize that I'm doing it. And this has been a year of just constantly coming to the complete end of my own strength and still having a marathon to run.
Yeah. Yes.
And recognizing
metaphor.
I can't. Yeah. I can't.
Yeah.
But he can. And it's okay that I can't.
Yeah.
And I especially can't if I try to think that I can or try to keep functioning like I can. And to show you how bad I am at this, I've had like chronic illness for a long time, but got some more clarity and more diagnoses. But under all of the stress of this, it's just flared everything worse than it's ever been. Mm-hmm. And so all of a sudden I physically couldn't.
Yeah.
Whereas before I could just work the long hours, do all the things, make sure everybody had what they needed. My body just stopped. Like I couldn't push anymore.
Yeah.
Which after working through all the like that feeling like failure of just recognizing, gosh, there's actually a gift in this.
There is a point.
There is a gift in this.
Okay.
And gosh, that's not easy.
No.
Especially when you feel like I'm supposed to be the parent. I'm supposed to be able to meet everybody's needs and do all the things.
Yeah. But I think whenever a parent is ill or in any way limited, you feel the guilt of, I didn't give my child a normal childhood. And your kids are not getting a normal childhood, not just because of you, but part of it is because of your chronic health issues.
Yeah.
But also because of two of their siblings. And, you know, I mean, you grew up in a household where I felt all the guilt and shame of, I couldn't give you a normal childhood. I lost my hearing. I was almost deaf by the time I was 30 years old. And that constant feeling of, I'm requiring things of my kids that is just, I shouldn't be requiring of my kids, but it's the only way I remember Matthew. He was the only one home because the older ones were in high school and he's like, you know, 10 with a little boy's voice. And I couldn't use a telephone. I mean, I couldn't answer the phone. Kids would have to take a message for me, and there were no cell phones back then. So, you know, I couldn't, here's the other thing. I couldn't hear the message that they left on the message machine because it was too, my ears couldn't hear it. Couldn't understand it. And telling Matthew, okay, clear your throat and let's practice talking like you're older. And I'd get that low voice, you know, totally fake, and make the phone call for me, you know, saying I was going to have to cancel something or whatever. And just thinking, what am I doing to my son? I mean, this is not the carefree childhood I wanted for him or for you, Elizabeth. I understand the guilt. I mean, and it is, the fact is, if mom is sick, if dad is sick, if a sibling is sick, the whole family feels that sickness. And that's not a bad thing.
Yeah.
As long as you are able to address it and be wide open about it and bring Jesus into it. We have some of our best friends growing up were had this beautiful daughter, Rachel, with Down syndrome. And as is often the case with Down syndrome kids, a whole lot of other syndromes that came along with it, health issues that came with it. And her siblings, I mean, they bore a lot. She had cancer at one point.
Yeah.
And they're two of the most compassionate, responsible people, solid people that I know. Yeah. And they didn't get the normal childhood that their mom wanted for them.
Yeah.
So, Elizabeth, can you just take a few minutes and tell us what's the gold you're finding in the middle of this? There's no solution. Mm-hmm. So I think everybody needs to know there is no solution. I've tried and tried to come up with solutions. Mm-hmm. There's no solution right now except to be steadfast through it.
Yeah.
And that's a word I keep using as I'm watching Elizabeth become, kind of switch over from being a can-do, let's just do this, to I'm just going to do today. Also, another friend of ours who has cancer, and it's not going to go away.
Yeah.
She's sharp. She was a graduate of West Point way back, one of the first classes, and totally a family woman and a great mom, great grandmother. And she said to me, well, I've learned to say I have today.
Yeah.
I seriously don't know if I have tomorrow, but I have today, and I'm going to just be part of today. So she's training herself to think about I have today.
Yeah.
And to me, she just feels like a hero in my eyes because I think, man, I'm making plans for 10 years from now.
Yeah.
She's my age. And she has today.
Yeah.
And that's steadfast. Mm-hmm. So what are you learning? What do you feel like you wish you kind of known going into this?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, you know, you see a lot looking back, but I think in both instances with severe illnesses with my kids that just change your life in a second, I think there's a season when that first happens, when I think as believers, we're all looking for, I want to learn from this. I want to redeem this. I want like, and in culture, like we want the happy outcome. We want to talk about the good things coming out of it. Mm-hmm. And when I look back at both times, there was a good long, felt like forever, but long chunk where there was nothing happy I could say about it. Mm-hmm. And I felt like that gets old to people. Yeah. There's not a lot of people that can hang in mm-mm. with that. And I didn't want to be like a negative person. I don't want to ever, you know, I don't know, just be Debbie Downer all the time. But I think that is so important. I think that time of brutal mm-hmm. honesty, mm-hmm. of having no happy, positive spin on it. And like allowing for that is all I'm saying. Mm-hmm. You can't control mm-hmm. that. You can't mm-mm. fabricate that. Mm-hmm. But I think we too often, especially in Christian culture, we try to make that really quick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And get to the part where God's telling you something amazing and showing mm-hmm. you something amazing. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't happen quickly. Mm-mm. That happens slowly. And it happens in the times when you can't see. It's so dark, you cannot see how you're going to do another day.
And don't you find that it's in those times when you feel like you need to hear the Lord the most,
yes.
that it's the hardest to hear?
Yes.
Something happens to us. Yep. It's not that God is far away, but something happens inside of us that pushes us out of the sense of his presence. And that's really shocking.
Yes. Which I fully experienced, where I was like, mm-hmm. gosh, God, I need you to say something.
Yeah.
And I don't really hear you. And so I just literally lived in the book of Psalms, not just the book of Psalms, lived in like a couple of Psalms, mm-hmm. like mm-hmm. probably between Psalm 30 and 40. I just like, just that's mm-hmm. the only thing that I could, mm-hmm. could feel anything.
Yeah.
And I knew those scriptures were true. And some of them were scriptures God had given me before in times with Birdie. And so I think, yes, those are like dark and horrible times. And yet they are forming in you things that you can't see, that you can't mm-hmm. tell somebody about, that you can't Instagram. Mm-hmm. And, mm-hmm. but I think be patient with that season.
Yeah.
I think it's inevitable. And I think it's actually really beautiful. Mm-hmm. And it's that actually gives you something to learn and say and uh-huh. be able to share with others. But I think coming out of that, like, I've got absolutely nothing. I think one thing for Brooke and I that has just continued to grow and just kind of doesn't go away is like cultivating gratitude in our own hearts, in our house, as a like culture of our family. I think when all of the like normal, like quote unquote normal things that you feel like should be owed, mm-hmm. like we should be able to go to the grocery store mm-hmm. or we, mm-hmm. I think anybody can relate to this with the pandemic, but we should be able to like
go on vacation.
Yeah. We should be able to go to the lake with our family and everybody should be able to do it and go. Mm-hmm. And that was just so quickly, like we couldn't do anything. Our mm-hmm. son couldn't leave the house. And then half the time, if we tried, it was a total disaster and we had to go mm-hmm. home. But I think that you have two options there. Like, and there are definitely times when we just felt a lot of self-pity. So you have that option. Mm-hmm. Or I think what it starts to do to you over time is start to recognize that every bit of our life is a gift from God. Yeah. And those moments, like I remember there was a time we were just sitting, we live in Bend, which happens to be incredibly beautiful, which is such a gift. And it was the middle of summer. And we're sitting at the river and we brought like a picnic. We just like needed out of the house. We needed out of the monotony of all of it. And all of our kids were happily playing in the water. Mm-hmm. Duke was doing okay. He was able to go. He was able to be present with us. Brooke and I were sitting on the beach just talking. And we both just like paused for a minute and looked at each other and recognized that moment as like this beautiful gift that we would have fully taken for granted 6 months earlier and been like, yeah, this is what families do in Bend. They go to the river and everybody needs to have a good attitude. And, you know, would have been annoyed if our kids didn't. But the fact that we were able to do that simple thing became just such a gift. And I think when you can start to look at life that way, like entitlement goes away.
Yeah.
Bitterness goes away. And doesn't mean it doesn't pop up. But I think when we start to recognize that life really is a gift from God, like, I don't think that I fully like understood that.
Does it make it hard for you when people complain on Instagram because, you know, their flight got canceled or, you know, something didn't go as well as they expected?
I had to go off Instagram for a while and I'm thinking about doing it again because I found myself just annoyed and judgy and cynical. And that was my, that wasn't their fault. And, but it was the reality of like, it was hard to, and I felt this after like reentering life. So when Birdie got sick, we had to, she was immunocompromised for over a year. So we had to like isolate at home basically. And I remember like entering back into normal life, but my life was not normal anymore, but everybody else's life was relatively the same, you know? And that, that's just, that's lonely. It's just lonely. It's think it's hard and it's
suffering
lonely.
Suffering is lonely. Yeah. I think so, because it's not lonely because you don't have people. It's lonely because nobody can shoulder that load with you.
Yeah.
Nobody can, I mean, the most empathetic mom, the most there for you dad, can't, they can't take it away and they can't even really experience what you're experiencing.
No. And I think those, I think we have to do two things in that. You have to acknowledge the loneliness. You have to say, I'm super lonely. This does not feel good. And you have to bring God into that because he is right there in that loneliness with you. He knows. I just remember feeling like I understood the sacrifice God made of sending his son Jesus and watching him suffer and watching my own kids suffer. And I couldn't, I can't take it away.
No,
I can't fix it. There's, I can't bring it upon myself.
Yeah, they there may not be a happy ending.
Yeah. And recognizing like God knows exactly what I'm feeling right now. And he's the only one that knows exactly what I'm feeling right now.
Yeah.
But I also think like there can be a tendency to in that loneliness to isolate because people don't get it.
Right.
And not everybody wants to. But there are people that do. But we have to educate them and bring them in. And I'm finding that even long term with Birdie, like you said, she looks normal. But doesn't always act like it can be hard to understand why she's acting the way she's acting. And we had another great therapist in all of this say, you don't have the luxury of being offended when somebody says something or gives you like a, I don't understand, look, you, he said, you don't have the luxury of being offended. You need to educate. You need to let them know what's happening and you need to bring them in. That's on you. And you can change this culture of the lack of support that special needs families have and the lack of understanding, the way we judge other parents in Target when their kid's freaking out. Well, now I'm like, well, the kids probably have sensory stuff. And, you know, because I have one of those kids. But man, that flipped our whole paradigm of instead of waiting for people to come to us, we need to bring people in and we need to lovingly educate them and let them know what our life is really like. And and in so doing, we're actually helping a lot of other families because we're not the only ones in this.
Yeah, you've helped you've helped your dad and I a great deal just by allowing us in to know what it's really like and then even trusting us to take care of them at times, knowing that we were at the end of their time with us. We were not going to say, oh, it's just perfectly great, you know. In fact, I found myself at one point saying, you know, I'm really glad that this particular child knows that I love him no matter what.
Yeah.
And that I hope that someday he can look back and he can say, you know, my ama, that's what they call me, she loved me through the worst time of my life and it didn't faze her. And gosh, that's what I just, you know, it gives all of us, if you have a sister or a brother or a mom or a dad or a friend or a neighbor going through something hard and traumatic, you know, we get an opportunity to show that kind of love that God has shown us. And it's the kind of love that doesn't need everything to get better. This kind of love that just says, you know, I see where you are right now and I'm in this with you. Yeah. You're stuck with me. I'm your grandma. I'm your mom. No matter where this goes.
Yeah. I think that if you have anybody in your life who's offered any sort of help,
yeah,
say whether yes. like that deep or just yeah. if there's anything I can do, let me know. Like that's another, I have such a hard time asking for help. Yeah. I have this like debilitating fear of inconveniencing people. Yeah. It's not I don't want to ask for help because I don't want people to know I need it. Like yeah. I'm fine with them yeah. knowing I need it. But I feel like I can't inconvenience people.
Put anybody out.
Yeah. yeah. But learning like even underneath a lot of that is pride.
Yes, it is.
And learning like I can ask for help and they might say no. And that's totally okay.
If you can. And for those of you who sincerely ask how we can help, number one, we shouldn't just ask how we can help. We should know ourselves well enough to know what is ours to do. What can we actually do to help and just mm-hmm. do it? But the other is if you say, there's nothing you can do, then that pushes me out of the problem.
Yeah.
And I want to be part of it with you. So giving even just a small thing to do, directions to help, is a big deal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I think that's huge. And that's like ongoing learning for yeah. me and not super easy, but I'm learning. Mm-hmm. I'm asking mm-hmm. you for help a lot, Mom.
You call your sister and she comes up and helps. And
yeah. 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 But I think, you know, another thing, maybe even tied into that, but something that I feel like has been a gradual learning for me is, you know, I think I used to feel like just defeated. Like yeah. I cannot do this at all, let alone do it well. Mm-hmm. Like, and carry the burden of like knowing what my kids have experienced this past year, wanting to like help make sure they're okay and fix it, you know, as a parent, right. which I think is a God-given, like yeah. we want to help our kids. Mm-hmm. Nobody wants to see their kids like suffer extremely, mm-hmm. you know? But moving from that, like just constant place of defeat and honestly anger at myself, anger at just everything, to a place of acceptance mm-hmm. and accepting like, yeah, this is not ever the journey I would have mm-hmm. ever wished. I still mm-hmm. don't wish it. I wouldn't wish it upon this last year upon anyone. Mm-hmm. But yet when I can like accept that this is the reality of what's happening mm-hmm. and trust that even though I don't know the outcome, I don't mm-hmm. know if this has a happy ending. Like if mm-hmm. it has one of those endings that's like, wow, that was awful, but like, look what God did and I wouldn't have it any other way. Like mm-hmm. I hope that that is the outcome yeah. that like it feels fully redeemed at yeah. some point, but I don't know. Uh-uh. And right now it's not, but being able to like just press into everyday acceptance. And mm-hmm. I mean acceptance, not just of the big thing that's happening, but of like the constant little deaths of dreams of how you wish yeah. this season looked like. Like for me wrestling through, like all I ever wanted to do was be a mom. Mm-hmm. And it looks very different than
yeah.
I ever thought it was going to. Yeah. But like accepting that, like this mm-hmm. is my journey of motherhood, mm-hmm. not in a defeatist way, but in a like surrendered way.
Yeah.
And then when you're able to do that, like I feel like it's enabled me to, I think I can naturally be self-preserving of like, well, and I've always thought like I want to fully invest in my family, be a really good mom, but I want to like keep interest alive because I don't mm-hmm. want to be a shell of a human when they're all grown and like then be this needy mm-hmm. grandma who's like, I don't have anything to do with my life, you mm-hmm. know? So I've always had that like in the back of my mind, but I cannot have that in the back of my mind in mm-hmm. this season. Mm-mm. It is like all in. And
you
in
don't
that,
even know, honestly, if you will ever have an empty nest.
No. Yeah. But I think when I'm able to like shed that fear of because I've accepted what's happening, and this is when I say when I'm able, it's because some days I can do it and some days mm-hmm. I can't. That's just the reality of it. But then I can like fully surrender all of myself. Like right mm-hmm. now, just getting through one day in our house requires every ounce of me, mm-hmm. like all mm-hmm. of me, saying no to any of the things that I would maybe like to put on my to-do list. But that is just what it requires. And I, when I am able to like go into it with that perspective, then I find joy. I find like fulfillment and I find, okay, like this is just what my family needs right now. And yeah, I'm afraid of if it's going to need that for the next 20 years, but I can't know that right now. I can only know today and today it's what they need. And tomorrow that's what they're going to need too. You know, that's, and I, that is, like I said, some days I can do that and other days I can't.
Yeah. Well, thank you for sharing so openly. And I hope what you've come away from this is that, you know, the message we're getting, and I'm gonna blame it on Instagram, which I love Instagram, but the message we're getting, especially maybe or including from some Christian voices, is all tends to be very, you can do it, pursue your dreams, think big, dream big, go after them, don't let anything stop you. And in the right context, that's beautiful encouragement to get us out of complacency and to realize, oh my gosh, I actually have this one life to live. I want to fully engage for Jesus in this life that I have. There's beauty in that, but it's an unbalanced message right now.
Yeah.
Because the reality is, sometimes life is so overwhelming that just doing today is triumphant that you made it through the day.
Yeah.
And there are also to make us aware of people around us who they cannot dream anymore because you just don't know. Maybe there will become a time of dreaming or maybe there never will be.
Yeah.
This friend of ours who we revere as one of the most beautiful, godly women we know.
Yeah.
You will never read a book written by her. She will never be a big, she'll never have 25,000, 50, 300,000 followers.
No.
She is the most refined, beautiful, genuinely loving friend, person, woman, human being I know.
With a depth of character like I've never seen before.
Never seen before.
She wrote me a letter when we were in the hospital with Birdie, basically telling me what I was going to experience with Jesus. Mm-hmm. Through Birdie's life.
Yeah.
And every word of it has been true.
Yeah.
5 years in, like that girl has changed our whole family in such a beautiful way. Mm-hmm. And yes, it's horrifically hard. But I was just, this morning, Duke was doing this tutoring online. He does twice a week with the tutor. And he was, I couldn't hear everything he was saying because he was wearing headphones. But he was started telling the tutor about Birdie. And about her finding something for him. And he said, you know, he's just lighting up talking about his sister. Mm-hmm. And he says, yeah, you know, she has special needs, but she's like super smart.
Yeah.
And she has this like memory, like her memory is insane. Like he goes on and on about just telling all about his special needs sister who has this incredible memory. And she always knows where everything is in the house, which is totally true. If you lose anything, just ask Birdie. But anyway, that, the beauty that you get to experience in suffering, it doesn't put a bow on it and make
it doesn't.
Easy or even always worth it. But yet it's a beauty that I don't see it happens any other way.
No, I don't think it happens any other way. And I think that someday when that city comes down and is lowered and real life, eternal life really, we step into the second half of eternal life. I think it's going to be people like our friend Vicky, who are the superstars.
Yep.
And that everybody's going to crowd around wanting to hear every little story that we missed out on of how Jesus was triumphant in her life through the worst of times, through an entire life that she laid down to serve her little girl and make it more than okay with her family in this process, raise some of the most beautiful children I know and have a husband who adores her and thinks like we do. And now we want to just close this time in reading. There is a book that Elizabeth and I are totally in love with. And Elizabeth, will you please remind me of the title?
Every Moment Holy. It's a book of liturgies, which are essentially prayers that we want to live into. Yes. And so they're almost like a almost like a poem, poetry. But a prayer.
It's really poetry or lyrics for a song.
Yeah.
And he's written these for different occasions in your life, and they just will touch you. If you love words and poetry or just lyrics, get this book.
Yes.
Every Moment Holy. I just feel like it should be in every home. But I want to read you excerpts. It's too long for me to read the whole thing, but it's really hard to choose what to read and not to read.
So
it's been a long episode. We'll put the name of it in our
show notes. Yeah.
And maybe there's even a way to get the whole thing put on our Instagram. I don't know. Stay tuned and let's see if we can get permission to put the whole thing. It's under the category of sorrow and lament. And he calls this a liturgy for the death of a dream. He starts, O Christ, in whom the final fulfillment of all hope is held secure, I bring to you now the weathered fragments of my former dreams, the broken pieces of my expectations, the rent patches of hopes worn thin, the shards of some shattered image of life as I once thought it would be. What I so wanted has not come to pass. I invested my hopes in desires that returned only sorrow and frustration. Those dreams, like glimmering fairy feasts, could not sustain me. And in my head, I know that you are sovereign even over this, over my tears, my confusion, and my disappointment. And he ends it with saying, you are the king of my collapse. You answer not what I demand, but what I do not even know to ask. Now take this dream, this husk, this chaff of my desire, and give it back reformed and remade according to your better vision, or do not give it back at all. Here in the ruins of my wrecked expectations, let me make this best confession. Not my dreams, O Lord, not my dreams, but yours be done. Amen.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. If this podcast has blessed you in any way, here's a few ways that you can partner with us in this ministry. First is to give. Intentional Parents is a nonprofit, and we rely on the generous giving of our partners. So please head over to our website, intentionalparents.org/give, if you would like to become one of our partners through giving. Second is to share it. If this has at all been helpful to you, we encourage you to share it with your friends, your family, and those that you know would be blessed by it. Third is to follow us on social media platforms, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. You can find us on Instagram at intentional_parents. And lastly, if you would head over to iTunes, if you enjoyed today's episode, and leave a review on iTunes, this helps us bring more hope, help, and healing for families.